Good afternoon.
We want to thank you for that, George. Appreciate that. We want to welcome everyone for this work session on pension reform. Appreciate this. Appreciate our panel being here. We're going to go and start eating off. I will say we have Councilwoman Price is with us via the phone. I think we have another member who John will introduce as well on that. So this time I'll turn it over to our city manager, Mr. John Klim.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and through you to the members of our council. As you mentioned, we're here today to talk about pension reform. And why, you may ask, would we ruin your beautiful afternoon to talk about something as dry and boring as pension reform? The truth is that municipal governments nationally are challenged with several items that are posing serious challenges to budgets, bond ratings, and future funding for priority programs. They're known as budget busters, costs that, if not contained, can wreak havoc on a city's long-term financial stability. They could be capital infrastructure neglect, excessive debt, or long-term pension obligations that are potentially these so-called budget busters. But the truth is that you as councilors probably won't be asked to do anything more significant to the long-term health and stability of our community than addressing these issues. For you, as our council members, and especially those soon to depart, you can't expect to be thanked or even recognized for your financial stewardship, but you should. You've made dramatic and long-lasting changes that will impact our community financially for years. Now, the good news for Aiken is that, unlike many communities that we read about across the country, we are not facing a pension crisis at all. Our system is well-managed and well-funded and far from the chaos that is occurring in the public and private sectors elsewhere. So we're not here to say that the sky is falling, but rather that for the sake of long-term financial stability for our city, that we respectfully suggest that we consider reforming a system that increasingly nationally is seen as archaic and outdated. It doesn't reflect the realities that we face today and tomorrow. Because of wise decision-making in Aiken in the past, we are not recommending radical changes, or actually any changes, to the pension program for our existing employees and for our existing retirees. It's simply not necessary, and in my opinion, would breach a pledge that we made to our employees when we hired them some many, many years ago. The millions, though, that you save by repairing a road or a water pipe or even reforming a pension system today might make the difference between a safe and unsafe community decades into the future, might provide a youngster a recreational or educational opportunity that they otherwise wouldn't have, that could change their life. We asked the panel that is before you of experts this afternoon to help us design a basic defined contribution plan that has been tried and tested by other private and public sector entities. There's no need for us to reinvent the wheel or spend months and months or years developing what already works elsewhere. So we've designed a defined contribution plan, thanks to many, if not most, of the folks that are before you, for all new employees. But we also give the younger and newer employees the opportunity, with the language that we have submitted to you, an option to stay in the defined benefit plan or to move to a defined contribution plan at their choosing. So we have a relatively short presentation for you this afternoon. We've received over 40 questions, and we've tried to circulate those, and we thank the authors of those questions for their thoughtful inquiry. But we have a panel that I mentioned, of course, Gary Smith, our city attorney, along with Warren Anthony, who we all know, who has been so helpful to us in the past. We have our Director of Finance, Kim Abney, who's worked very tirelessly on so many of the issues that we're facing over the past year or two. We have Rob Seidel from Empowerment, one of the largest purveyors of retirement services to public sector entities in this country. We have Joel Black, who's a CPA from Alden and Jenkins. We have Ben Upchurch, right, on the phone, who is an actuary that can answer the types of long-range financial questions that you might have for Milliman. They are our actuaries. And so having said all of that, we do have a presentation that we want to open the rest of the forum for your questions. If we can't answer your questions or we need to get back to you or you want to get back to us, feel free to do that via email, and we'll try to continue to tap the expertise that we've assembled here to answer your questions. So, Kim, would you like to lead us off?
Yes. You have in front of you the PowerPoint that will show up on the screen, and basically it's just an outline so that we can step through, hopefully somewhat quickly, some of the highlights. And if you have a burning question, you know, ask at that time, but if you can, probably one of the questions to the end, maybe your question will be answered as we go through the PowerPoint. I do want to make sure that Ben can hear us and you hear me. Ben?
Yes, hi, Kim.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure. And each one of the people that's with us today will have a part as we step through the slides. So we're going to get started. And I'm going to ask Joel to start us off with just talking about what a defined contribution plan is.
And Kim, please note that I can hear you adequately as well.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Joel Black, and glad to be here to help in any way that I can. The first slide we talked about is really kind of defining, setting the stage of what a defined contribution plan is, the new plan that you're looking at. And it is really a plan where the employee and employer share in the cost of an employee's retirement by making contributions into the plan while the employee is providing their service. So, you know, every pay period, some defined percentage of their payroll will be contributed by them and by the employer into an individual account, and that account will be in the name of that employee, and so they will contribute every pay period based on that formula and percentage into this account, and that account will grow over time as they provide service. And then when they leave the city through termination or retirement, then that account really stays with them, and so they can take that account if they terminate and move on to another employer. They can roll that into an IRA. It can sit there. They can move it into an account with their new employer. But it's kind of portable in that way. It can move around, and at that point of termination, the city's responsibility for funding is done and ended. If they retire, if that's their termination as their retirement, as well, the city's, as the employer's responsibility to fund it has ended. So whatever, if they retire with the city, whatever has accumulated in their individual account is then theirs to then draw upon in retirement, and your responsibility would be done. So I think from there, to talk about retirement planning, and Ben is going to go over the next slide.
Ben, did you want me to say something about this one?
Feel free.
Yeah, I guess the purpose that we thought of this slide was, you know, to give some guidance, and there are several studies out there on really what is an adequate retirement income for someone that retires, say, at age 65. And I guess by adequate, what we mean is to kind of have a similar standard of living that individual had right up to retirement. And like I said, there have been several studies. I mean, since I've been an actuary back in the early 80s, I've seen numerous studies. I guess the two that we relied on here, there was a white paper by TIAA Kraft, and there was another Society of Actuaries practice paper. And what we're seeing is a range of between 75 or 80 or 90% of what someone is making as their final pay. So that's kind of our guideline of what really theoretically would need to be provided for someone in retirement in order to give them an adequate, to not have any kind of, you've heard of that retirement gap, funding gap, and This is kind of what we're looking at. If someone is a long-term employee, or not necessarily but long-term, but over their working career, 35 to 40 years, we're seeing that Social Security is, you know, providing about half of that, about 40% of that. It's, for someone that's a little lower paid, it's going to be higher than that. For someone higher paid, it's going to be lower, and that's just because of the way the Social Security indexing works. Is everybody hearing me okay?
Yes.
Okay. And so with that in mind, with the fact that Social Security is providing about 40%, then the question is, from other sources, from your individual savings along with any retirement savings, you know, what is needed on that end in order to get to our, you know, 80 to 90%? And what these models are showing, and it's probably a little more than you might think, but, you know, an individual really needs about 12% of savings a year over that 35 or 40-year career to accumulate enough money to where they can combine that with Social Security. And so when I'm saying 12%, that's really from all retirement savings. Kim, you mentioned the South Carolina Deferred Comp Program. So the whole purpose of this is really to kind of give us some guidelines of, you know, what type of defined contribution allocation and any kind of, you know, city match, you know, is to help us kind of, because I think the purpose is to get these new hires with the city and to offer a program that they can feel comfortable and proud of and participate in that will provide them with that retirement security that they're looking for.
Thank you.
Did you have anything, Kim, to add to that? Or?
No, I think that covered that one.
Okay.
It kind of leads into our design. And I think Joel's going to talk about what he's seen in a lot of his experiences.
We at Baldwin & Jenkins audit over 300 governmental entities throughout the Southeast in Georgia, South Carolina, and other states as well. Defined contribution plans are not atypical. I mean, there are a fair amount of defined benefit plans that still exist, but it does seem to be the trend, and not even the trend, it's been the trend for several years now, that governments are transitioning to defined contribution plans, and some of my clients have had defined contribution plans for many, many years, maybe never had a defined benefit plan, so it's not certainly atypical to have a defined contribution plan, and what you have as being proposed here is a plan that will start January 1st, 2018, and all new employees starting at that date will participate in this new defined contribution plan after 1 year of service. So you kind of designed in something, kind of a time period to make sure that they're going to be, they're serious about working with the city, they're good employees or valuable employees, so you're given some time to make sure that works out before you then start providing this benefit to them after 1 year of service. And again, a period like that in a start of employment is not, you know, something we see with a number of our benefit plans, so that's not atypical. And then to get to that 12% that Ben was just talking about, you guys have decided to, the city as the employer will contribute 6% of that funding, and the employee themselves will contribute the other 6% to get to the 12%. And, you know, this is kind of all across the board in my clients. I mean, we have some that are more heavily funded by the employer. We have some that are more heavily funded by the city. It's just there are all sorts of ways. This is just a choice that you guys, you know, can decide and make how to break up this 12%. I see it all kind of different ways, but certainly an even split of 6% would, again, not be atypical of what we see at all with many of our clients that have DC plans. And then you also have a provision that, and this is very typical of our of plans we see, that the employee would be fully vested once in their contributions once they make them. So, in other words, the 6% they're contributing into their account, they will always have access to that. And if they leave within a year after starting the plan, then they get to keep that 6% that they contributed. But the 6% that you as the employer contributed, while it will be in their account, if they leave before the end of 5 years of employment, then they don't vest in that, and that would revert back to, I guess, the city through the plan. It would not stay with the employee. And I see that done different ways in some of my clients, but there's always usually some vesting period. I've never seen a defined contribution where they fully vest with everything the employer contributes from day one. Usually there's kind of a gradual scale. Sometimes I've seen what's become very common these days is that maybe the first 3 years you don't vest in anything, but after 3 years then you start gradually scaling into you vest in 20% of what the employer contributes, then 40%, then 60% at years 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7, something like that. You guys have decided to just make it 100% after 5 years, so you don't get anything of the employer's part in any of the first 5 years, but after 5 years, then you get 100%. That's a decision y'all have made. Again, not very atypical for there to be some kind of vesting period like that.
Gradual vesting or just all at once?
I would say it's more typical for us to see gradual vesting. Actually, what has become the most typical is an in-between, where it's usually like 2 to 3 years of you don't vest in anything the first 2 to 3 years, and then you start gradually vesting in years 3 through 5 or 3 through 7. That's probably the most typical that I've seen, but you know, that doesn't sound all that different than just 100% after 5 years.
The gradual vesting, the thing that would seem to me to be attractive to that, it would encourage people to remain. As opposed to full vesting right away, they take their money and run.
Yeah, certainly. So the 5 years you guys have, that's the decision y'all made for the 5 years. Is to
we haven't made any decisions yet, I think.
Well, okay. Yeah.
The way the document is drafted, it would be a 5 year. So they don't get to take anything unless they stay for 5 years.
Yes.
And that would basically to mirror the plan that we have in place with the defined benefit plan. You don't actually enter that plan until you've been here a year, and you don't vest unless you've stayed 5 years. So in the same way, if somebody came and worked for us for 4 years and 11 months under the defined contribution plan, they could take their 6%, but they wouldn't get any of the city's 6% unless they stay 5 years.
Well, my question was based on the goal of encouraging retention of people if we're going to put city money into their retirement plan. And it's in their interest as well. It's not a one-sided benefit. It's whatever we can do to encourage people to stay in the retirement plan, we need to do. And if it's gradual, that's worthwhile.
Absolutely. That's the reason for this.
This would be an excellent point just to remind all that we have put on the table a very rough draft. And we will continue to hear that they can give us some advice, but there's no right answer. And so there's various ways that we could do vesting, and so we just put a document on the table as a place to start. And we hope the council really fully debates issues like that, because there's no right or wrong. There's various pros and cons.
We have 25 questions.
And so, you know, when we get into the 6% and 6%, how did you come up with 12%? I mean, those are all their best estimates or advice, but ultimately those will be council decisions.
Let me ask a question. Joel, I wasn't quite clear when you said the first year. The first year the individual starts contributing from paycheck number one, 6%?
I think the way the current plan design is that you don't. The first year, nobody contributes anything, and then after the first year, that's when they can enter the plan, and then they start contributing.
Okay, so year two, they start doing their 6%, and is that automatic? Can they do more or less, or is this just a flat 6%?
That's a minimum.
In this plan, they would do just whatever the plan states. So as it's written, it would be 6, and then the city would contribute 6, but they can, and we would encourage all employees to also use the deferred compensation plan available through the state of South Carolina to have a 401k or a 457 or a Roth account. Okay. To help them build their retirement savings.
So they can not overfund
this. They can't put have us withhold more than 6% pre-tax.
No. The way it's written, and because of
they'd have to go with the 401k or 457.
They would be able to use, and all employees today can use the South Carolina deferred comp plan.
Why do they have to? Well, why is it drafted at this point so that would be a year before they could even have any of their own money going into it?
Because the unfortunate fact of the matter is we have a lot of people leave in the first year of employment.
But if it's their money and they're not vested, then there's no risk to us.
It's a lot of record keeping and, you know, we want to set up an account. We've got to draft it through their payroll. I mean, there's a lot to do. And, again, our thought process, it doesn't have to be, was that we don't have a defined benefit plan.
I'm just thinking about, you know, this is a benefit. This is a perk. This is a thing that can make the city's offer of employment maybe equally or more attractive than somebody else's offer of employment. But you know, in my experience, in the private sector, usually the longest that people would have to wait to be able to start participating that I've seen. I mean, I know there are longer, but the ones that I'm accustomed to is about a 6-month wait or less. And then also the vesting period is usually a lot shorter than 5 years in the private sector. So if, you know, if we're worried about losing people to private sector jobs or not being able to attract people in the first place, I think we need to think about those as from a competitive standpoint, not just a matter of what it means to us, but also what it means in terms of making us competitive in the marketplace for talent.
Well, and germane to that, Ken, what's the lowest hourly wage that we hire somebody at?
Facilities assistants are like just under $11 an hour, I believe.
Okay. So the issue that concerned me was we're going to pay somebody $11 an hour, and then their 13-month present is a 6% reduction in their take-home pay, so they have retirement. I'm concerned, and I'd love to hear what you have to say. That seems to me, at those wages, that's a sizable reduction in take-home pay.
6% of $11 is 66 cents an hour.
Yeah.
But there's several ways. I mean, first of all, that really is a compensation issue as opposed to a pension issue. I mean, the issue that Council Member Tawar raises is a serious issue, legitimate issue, that is being discussed as part of the compensation plan. The alternative to working at Aiken for many employees are North Augusta or the county. And so, but if you look at their pension plans, they're certainly not better off. They'd be better off to stay because their contribution is even larger. And so I would hope that we would address that issue in much more long-term fashion by understanding that we're not paying, we're losing too many entry-level people because we're not competitive. And when we solve that problem...
On pay or not competitive on benefits?
We're not competitive in terms of pay.
Okay.
There are certain jobs, drivers, for example, we're just losing wholesale, we're losing them. They're going elsewhere. And we recognize that, and we've got a plan to deal with that.
But it still remains, and I don't know how many other plans do what we're doing. I mean, you want to encourage people to participate in this plan, and I'm not so sure a pay cut on their first anniversary.
So what's the contribution to North Augusta?
This is not people that...
I see your point.
I'm sorry. But right now we're putting, 16%? Not withholding anything from their check, but we're contributing 16% to a defined benefit plan in their name?
No.
What are we contributing right now?
Right now, our defined benefit plan tells our employees that when you retire, you will have this benefit.
Right.
This formula that
we're setting
for the rest of your life. We don't have any individual accounts for employees.
Right.
So the 16% is the total amount that we put in for the active employees as well as the retirees that are already drawing their pension.
16% of what number?
Of the salaries of the people who are still here.
Okay, so then we're putting 16% of what we pay you in salary.
Well,
it's not in their name, but we're still putting that in somewhere.
Yeah.
Okay. So either way, I mean, this represents fewer
city dollars going into a pension fund or pension account, which would then free up, theoretically, I don't know if this is the way you propose to do it, but it would theoretically free up money to be used to help the scenario that Dick's worried about.
And it'll be several years before we're going to see any reduction to what we're currently paying.
I mean, there's a truth about our pension program, and before I tell you what that truth is, I want to reiterate the point that I made, is that I believe that we have a moral agreement with our existing employees. They took the job.
Absolutely.
What the deal was. So I'm not talking about our existing employees. But the fact is, and maybe our friend from Empower can enlighten us a little bit, but I think we would have to look long and hard to find such a generous pension plan nationally. So the truth is, this is about saving money. We have a council that has finally decided that it's going to take on financial responsibilities instead of just putting everything underneath the carpet, like infrastructure repair. But we know that's hundreds of millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars. We know health care every year goes up. And so there are these costs that are just going to continue to explode. The pension costs are one area that the private sector decades ago began to address, that the public sector now is addressing, and that is putting a more realistic plan together. As I said, I have never found another entity that has the plan that Aiken has. Now, maybe that's something we should, in the past, have been proud about, but it's not sustainable unless you want to make decisions that are just not going to provide basic services.
Steve, all of us have been talking about this for 3 or 4 years. Yeah. I mean, it's a glooming time bomb, I guess. And so
but the point is that we're doing this for the long term. We're doing this for beneficiaries decades out.
Right.
And we're not in financial crisis. So your stewardship and your leadership in the past has put us in a very, very good position. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't take actions to forestall financial calamity in the future. But we've made a commitment to our existing employees, and we don't need to be altering the bond that we've created with our employees to still get the financial benefit that we want to get in the future.
Right.
But your point about the wages is quite correct. I've talked to an employee who's been with us for 9 years, I think, as I recall, making $13 an hour. And we're seeing on this page a starting salary of $30,000. We don't have many starting salaries at $30,000. I don't know if we have any. If we do, it would probably be in... public safety would be clearly well over 30,000.
Engineers and accountants and some supervisors would be in that range.
Well, how many supervisors start it?
Depends on what they're supervising. But do we want to get back to the example? Ben has prepared an example just because it was one of the questions that was asked, and I thought it was something that I had left out of the original draft. So, just to Ben walk you through how this would work. And I think one other thing I just wanted to clarify is the employee's portion, that 6%, would be pre-tax. So it's not an after-tax reduction to their take-home pay. It is pre-tax, so it's not quite a whole 6% that they are going to be losing. And it's not losing, it's saving for retirement. And on their six-month anniversary, typically, they would come off probation and receive a 5% salary adjustment. So while they might be hired in at just under $11, they'll have an adjustment and then a reduction.
Quick question on that chart. When you assume a 7% annual interest gain, are you applying that to the contribution of the employee themselves and the city match at the same time?
And?
Again, I set this up where it could be, you have a lot of flexibility with the input items that are highlighted, but that is, under that 7%, that is assuming that it's assuming that both the employee money, which is in this case is 6%, and then we've assumed a share, equal sharing on the employer side. So it is assuming that both of those sources of money are in the account balance and that they are earning 7% for that full year period.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Again, and I guess with the illustration we had, Kim, this does show over a 30-year period, we're showing the replacement without any employer money is the $216,000, which I'm converting it to, if that person could take that money and go to an insurance company and purchase an annuity, that was my goal of saying what would that provide as a monthly annuity. And so with the 100% match, they're having the $432,000, which to go out and purchase an annuity, a guaranteed annuity with a life insurance carrier would give you roughly $32,000 a year. And that compared to that person's salary when they retire, which is the $53,275, that's about a 60% replacement ratio. But again, you know, the purpose of me having this, of developing, this was just one snapshot of the spreadsheet, but, you know, it does give the ability to play around with it with different percentages and different starting salaries and different assumed interest rates.
Isn't there a lot of skepticism today about getting a 7% return? I mean, I don't think there's anybody in a room that gets a 7% return. Typically, we've added in higher than 7% returns years ago, perhaps prior to 2007. But to start this plan from scratch, is it realistic to assume that we can make a 7% return?
But, you know, I agree with you. I think this was more for illustration purposes, and you have to understand. Now, Kim, I don't know all the different investment choices, but it's my understanding that there would be a selection of different funds, fixed income equities that the individual employee would actually be able to choose from. And they would be getting education advice. They would be getting educational advice as far as, you know, what their risk tolerance is.
Yeah, you could run this illustration at any number, 3%,
right.
7%, 12%. I mean, that's just a...
Yeah, so a typical defined contribution plan lineup would give you a variety of different asset classes to choose from to make the portfolio as personalized as you'd want it. And so depending on how young you are, you might be a little bit more aggressive. So if you were, 25 years old in a pretty aggressive portfolio over the last 2 or 3 years, you're probably up, a much higher rate than 7% annually. So it's certainly something that will go up and down. But depending on how the plan gets structured, you may provide certain investment options that will do the investment selection for the participants, or the participants can have the responsibility to do the investment selection on their own. So it comes back to sort of how you would structure the plan. But over a long period of time, if you look at a diversified portfolio from a rolling 10-year period, 7% isn't really far off the mark over a long term.
What are you seeing nationally? What are you saying? If you aggregate the plans, I mean, how is 7% an average estimated rate of return? Are you seeing people being more conservative than that? Or?
Well, it would definitely depend on the specific plan. For a defined contribution plan, as opposed to a defined benefit plan where you sort of have an assumed annual rate of return,
yep.
It's going to be a lot different in the defined contribution plan. So we've seen it from people that earn 2% per year to some people that, if they get very aggressive, earn 40% in a year. And so that's where some of the education and the investment advice can come in to help to make sure that, depending where you are in your life, what sources of income you have available to you, how do you structure this type of an account in the most optimal way to achieve that income replacement that you're looking for.
Let me ask a real weird question. Assuming an employee starts participating in year two, I guess that's the way it is, and you act like he was vested from year two on, but he leaves just prior to year five. Now, he has monies in there, 6% from his pocket, 6% from the city. And if there's a 7% gain, how much of that 7% gain, you know, he leaves just before, he's not vested, he has to get his own money back, but did his own money do any gain at all?
Yes.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
Exactly. So part of the selection process for choosing the record keeper and why you would want to have one is for that very purpose, to differentiate the different buckets of money that are going into that account. So you could have, you know, if it was a private company retirement plan, you might have four sources of income that come into that bucket. And as the record keeper, they would account for each bucket of money. And so in that example, the participant's money would be accounted for, and then obviously the gains attributed to that bucket would be theirs to take with them when they separate service. So you might have two line items where you have an employee's contribution and an employer's contribution. It would be two separate line items, but for most people, they just kind of aggregate it together until that point in time when they separate service.
And then the way we have drafted the plan is there would be an option for some of our employees that are currently employed to make a choice to go to this defined contribution if they want that. So I'm going to let Ben cover how that would kind of work, because
that's a good idea.
Require a lot of actuarial calculations and a lot of work on their side.
Yeah. You're right, Kim. I think the whole goal here was to provide your younger participants in the defined benefit plan the same opportunity that you're giving the new hires. And we looked at that, and I think by having these thresholds of, you know, having either less than 2 years of service at 1/1/18, or the other criteria of just, you know, having less than 10 years and being less than 35 at the beginning of the current plan year that we're in with a defined benefit plan, that opens up roughly 90 people, isn't that right? Or
yes.
And it just, you know, like I said, it allows them the opportunity. It's a choice that they would have. And it's really just a win-win, because it's a win-win for the city, I mean, and the participant. If they, you know, you're not forcing them to make any action, and we will be doing a lot of education with them and, you know, helping them to make that decision in 2018. But, you know, if they decide, you know, but the bottom line is, frankly, you know, if the whole purpose is the defined benefit plan, and what we're seeing is to be able to, you know, to budget that better and to account for the liabilities in the defined benefit plan. Anything that you can do by getting these people to cross over, you're eliminating any kind of future liabilities that could be volatile on how we measure them. So there will be an ultimate cost saving to the city for people that choose to join, that are currently in the defined benefit plan, that would decide to cross over. The way I understand this, Kim, they would actually, you know, their account, the defined benefit, what they're accrued would actually not go into the defined contribution plan until the beginning of 2019. So there will be a time to where we can sit and talk with the employees that are affected to where they can make a prudent decision.
Yes, that is our plan as we have it written. They
right.
have basically, if council so chooses to start the defined contribution plan, it would be four employees hired after January 1 of 18, or whatever date y'all choose, and then we would have that year to educate current employees, get a record keeper on board, set up the accounts, have everything in place for that first payroll deduction 1 year out.
So a 33-year-old employee with 8 years of service decides, I want to switch to the DC plan. Mechanically, what happens? Does he bring any money with him? Apparently not, from the DB plan?
Yes.
Yes.
Ben would do that calculation.
Okay.
Right.
So
the value of that accrued benefit would transfer over into the defined contribution right. plan.
And he would start the 6% right away. There'd be no 1 year
right.
wait for him.
Right. Or her. He has already been here a year.
Okay, so now, start right over. Okay.
Any existing employee, whether it's the first bullet or the second bullet, are they instantaneously vested?
Not if they're in the second bullet or in the first bullet with less than 5 years of service.
Still 5 years.
Still 5 years of service. And it'll be 5 years of service for their defined benefit as well.
So for some people, the money that's the transfer from the defined benefit, defined contribution, if they do leave the city before 5 years of employment, that, you know, that money, that would be a gain to the city. That would, they would have forfeited that.
Say that again.
Say that again, Ben.
If they leave before they're vested, the money that the city has been putting aside for them would revert back to the city. So.
And I believe your plan document will address how to do that.
Yes. And the defined benefit plan would need to be simultaneously amended if we have a defined contribution plan to make these changes in the defined benefit plan as well. And just a brief comment about the defined benefit plan. Ben can speak to this one. Obviously, it provides a lifetime benefit, and it will eventually shrink to the point that it ends when the last employee, who hopefully would become a retiree, passes on, and the plan is closed. But Ben can talk about how that would transition.
You touched on some of it, you know, just to quickly go through that. You know, currently the defined benefit plan, there's no employee contribution. It's totally paid for by the city. It is what I would call a very well-funded plan. What we call the funded status is 91%. Their currently planned assets of about 33.5. Of course, this was at the beginning of July, Kim. There were assets of about $33.5 million. Liabilities were $36.5 million. As you can see, you know, I'd say over half the group now are really inactive employees that are either terminated, that are not retiring, but they are vested and that they will ultimately draw a benefit, and you have 136 retirees that are actually receiving benefits. So right now, you know, I'd say less than half your total participants are active employees. And again, I think by limiting... You know, what we're seeing is just by limiting future entry, freezing future entry of actives is just, it's going to help the plan be more predictable on what it costs and result in savings on the, you know, to the city because of the defined contribution program.
And our current average pension, we write 136 checks a month. And the average pension is $1,508 a month, or translated to an annual pension of $18,102. And since we've started keeping track of replacement percentage, which has only been in about the last 5 or 6 years, the average replacement upon retirement is 41%. So I think that kind of goes well. We follow along with the statistics that we've been talking about.
What's your median pension?
I'll have to get you median. I did average. I took how much we paid divided by 136. So.
Question on the 91%. That's a good number today, considering the market just went over 23,000 yesterday. If this time next year the market's at 18,000, is that 91% number going to come down as well?
Yes.
It hasn't, because we've been putting money in to keep it there.
Yeah,
but we've been growing the money because the market's been growing significantly. So if the market, my question is, if the market goes down, is that 91% number going to go down? It would seem to me as though it would.
Well, but we've been adding money to keep it there.
No,
Richard, our investments have been increasing greater than our contribution.
It has, but when it reverses, we also reverse our contribution to go higher.
Right.
And Ben can talk to that, the smoothing that we do over the...
Yeah, there is asset smoothing, what we call, and, you know, there have been several years recently where you've earned 12% on your trust fund. We're smoothing that over a three-year period to where that kind of helps to kind of cushion the years where you're only getting 3 or 4% annually. So I don't have it in front of me, Kim, but I do think historically the trust fund has performed very well over the last 10 or 15 years, which would take into account, you know, upswings and downswings.
I do have our, since inception,
mm-hmm.
we have gained 7.79 gross of fees. 5 years is 10.73. 3 years, 6.75. And in the last 12 months, we're up 19.6%.
Mm-hmm.
20.5 gross of fees.
Question for the 110 terminated employees, if they're vested, can they move over into this plan so they can get their money? How do you treat the terminated and vested employees?
Well, they have to wait to a certain time.
Currently, they, as part of the defined benefit plan, they have to wait till they're 65, and then they come back and they would claim their accrued benefit at that point. We did not discuss any option for those folks. They would wait till they're 65.
The only people that can switch at the under 35 and still employed and working for a year.
Currently, some of the private employee plans have been going back, and people that fall into terminated or early retirement, they have bought them out, and that's what this would be. You would put them into the fund. And
there's an advantage to us to, if they were to do that, yeah.
Well, that's why I'm asking, has that happened where you got 110 vested employees sitting out there, and has any of your plans given them the option to transfer the money in?
DB to DC.
Or just to buy them up?
Yeah, I've seen both where they'll do a pension buyout, they'll calculate the accrued benefit and let the individual participant take a lump sum payout. They'll forego that lifetime benefit. I've seen that at a couple hospitals. So it's certainly something that's been done before.
Okay. There's an advantage to the buyout option, without a doubt.
Well, yeah, there is. But I'm sorry, this is really weedy, and if we shouldn't be getting down in here, we don't need to. But, this is qualified money. It's vested, even though they're terminated, it's vested money. And so any kind of buyout would create a tax liability and everything else. Is there any way to convert that to some sort of other tax-qualified investment vehicle that, other than this defined benefit plan, so that they would have so they could swap out of the DB program but still have tax-qualified money and not have to take a disbursement?
The current plan says you can transfer it to an IRA.
Yeah, you could.
There's no tax.
So you can transfer it into a.
Yes.
You don't have it. You don't have to have a tax event.
That's correct. That's the way it's written now, right? That's the way I read it.
And you can set up your defined contribution plan to allow for the rollover from your DB money.
I'm talking specifically with regard to the people that Reggie was talking about, those terminated but vested employees.
My understanding from both plans is that if we took the option to be able to roll it from one plan to the other, that's non-taxable until you pull the money out of it.
But that is, I was talking about these, if you were talking about buying people out that were vested, terminated employees, and you're talking about buying them out.
All they got to do is transfer it to an IRA.
Right, that was what I was asking.
Something.
Can the buyout be put into an IRA rather than...
The plan that's proposed has that option in there to buy, transfer it out of the plan.
Yes, but we had not contemplated the terminated vested that are out there, and we would definitely want to look at that carefully, because one thing we don't want to do is drain the assets of the defined benefit plan, because that would still be in existence for the current and retired people. So we want to make sure that we aren't doing anything to detriment that claim.
Well, you and I have to have I look at it as a net-net. If you take that money out, you don't have that money to pay in the future either.
I was saying we haven't studied that, so we would need to study that.
Well, it's an idea that obviously there must be some value to it when private employees are offering that almost across the board. Buying people out so you don't have that liability.
There's a net present value calculation or something.
Net present value calculation.
I will say that in the private sector, we see a lot of these lump sum windows for vested terms because they're avoiding, it's a way to avoid the PBGC premium, which is an insurance agency in Washington, D.C. that all corporate plans are under, and it's kind of like a tax. So they're able to... I will reiterate, though, that you can't just buy them out. You have to give them the option to cash it out, and they can either take it, they can take it as a taxable event, or they can roll it over. We have found in the programs that we've done, you have what's called a take rate, which is the percentage of people that you offer it to that actually take you up on it, and. What we've seen is it really takes a lot of communication and trying to connect with these people that have already left your employment, and just finding some of them is a challenge. But it's definitely something that we can look at, but it wasn't tied to the way we're treating the people that are within 2 years, because those are still active employees, and they would have the opportunity to, not only have that defined benefit money go to defined contribution, but they would have they would actually be electing their own money in there and having the match from the city.
I got a quick question. You mentioned education. I know, this is a few years ago, there's a way to play numbers like an equation on whether you take your Social Security at 62 versus wait till get full Social Security, and you bet on living a certain length of time. You can put that into a formula. Have you done, or do you have a formula that you can show people that are younger than 35 years old and have less than 10 years of service, and the people that have 2 years? 2 years or less of service. Is there a way you can actually have a formula, just plug in their salary, life expectancy, or whatever, and you come up with an equation that tells you which is more beneficial?
Some of the software that we use for calculating that type of thing would do that. So depending on which record keeper is chosen, they might have a different methodology. Some of that obviously is predicated on the assumptions that you build out into the system. But for our advisory services, we do have that, where you would put in what your Social Security would be, what you would expect to have in your retirement account. And ours runs a little bit different, but it's based on essentially outcomes, which is Monte Carlo simulations, so trying to predict the probability that you'll achieve a desired level of income. So it's a little bit different than just saying, I'll assume a 7% rate of return every year and I'll take out 4% from my account, because that's just not how the real world works. So that type of simulation will take into consideration both market highs, market lows, to see how that impacts what you would get from your not only retirement account, but maybe also help you decide when to take Social Security. Can you even afford to wait until 70?
Now, is that available to our HR and finance people when they counsel people, whether to, if somebody's thinking about switching over to the defined contribution versus the defined benefit?
We would anticipate selecting a record keeper before we start any education. That would be part of the project.
I have a question. I don't know who would best answer it, but typically for people that have retired, how many plans that do you know of that continue to give increases to retirement pay after they have retired? Or are there some plans that would restrict the increases to certain numbers, above those numbers, no, and below those? I mean, I certainly would not want to hurt anybody making $1,000 a month, but we have some making a lot more than that.
In the defined benefit plan, there I would say more than half have a COLA, a cost of living adjustment that goes up, and it's usually some defined percentage that can change, you know, based kind of like any benefit. It could change based on what could be appropriated that year or whatever, or what the commission or council wants to do. But usually there's something like that built in as an option, and then it's given sometimes and not. And then there are some plans we have that they don't have a COLA involved in them at all. And usually the actuary will assume some percentage based on what you have historically done, and you build that in all the models and stuff. But I would say most have something, but some don't. So,
what does ours have?
Our retirees get the same percentage cost of living as employees. So, if the employees don't get any adjustment, or the employees got like a flat adjustment, they didn't get any. If the employees get a half percent, they get a half percent. The employees get one.
Would it be legal, Gary, to limit increases to people making above a certain amount in retirement?
Warner says it would be. I would defer to him on a question like that.
Okay, I'm sorry. You're hiding. I should have directed the question to you. But we could do that.
Yeah, so the council has its complete choice as to what it wants to do annually on cost of living increases.
Okay.
That's an individual council decision year by year by the council.
That would have to be a change that we would make to the plan from what Kim said.
No, it's actually not in the plan. It is an extraordinary decision by the council each year.
Oh, okay.
The plan says nothing about it. It is up to the council.
Okay, thank you.
And just,
that's not what we've been told before.
We've mentioned this, but it would require a simultaneously amending the defined benefit plan if the defined contribution is something that you approve and adopt. We would have to also amend the plan to allow the irrevocable elections, the options for the people who've been here less than 2 years or under age 35 and less than 10 years, to actually allow a new defined contribution plan and change the name so that it's not confusing. It would state there'd be no new participants to enter into that plan after 1/1/18, and define who is eligible, which right now it's defined as full-time employees of the City of Aiken after 1 year of employment. So it would change that and state that no new participants will be added after the ones that enter employment on December 31st of 2017, if that's the year we end or the date we choose. And it will shrink, the defined benefit plan will continue to shrink until that last person passes. That might be 50 years from now, that might be 48, 62, I don't know. Everybody could take their guess and maybe nobody would be right. But ultimately that defined benefit plan would cease to exist.
I asked that very specific question, and the response I got back didn't come close to that. Go ahead, Elsa.
I have several questions, if you would indulge me here. First of all, I don't know whether Kim can answer this, or John, or Holmes. Empower, is this the only investment we'll be taking a look at, number one? And secondly, I'm trying to figure out where they're headquartered, and are there other areas in South Carolina, Georgia that they have introduced this plan to? I know that they have partnerships with a number of areas like Great West, Life, based on what I can read, the President Edmund Murphy has an incredible background. But I don't know how long Empower has been around. And thirdly, the risk. What are the risks with the options being presented to us and our employees? And fourth, when we look at the retirement and what the employees are investing, are we considering the pay that we give these employees from the starting pay of $59 an hour all the way up to our highest paid employee, that entire range? And I appreciate the response, please. Oh, and the financial strength. I know that Great Webb seems to have pretty incredible financial skills, but I don't know about the other investment companies. I would think that they have given the introduction of this company to us, but I don't know that for certain.
I will just explain how we came to invite Empower today. Empower manages the state of South Carolina's deferred comp plan. They also were selected through an extensive RFP with the town of Hilton Head Island. And so for those two reasons, I reached out to them, and they were gracious enough to be here with us tonight to represent what a record keeper would do and to answer the types of questions that would relate to that.
But Leslie's question was, are we aware of others? Now, I'm very well aware of ICMA.
Lots of others.
But we're...
Hilton Head received 15 responses yes. to their RFP.
Okay.
I'll let Rob answer the question about Great West.
Yep, so Great West Life Co. is the parent company for Empower Retirement. Great West has been around as a company since 1850. In 2012, there was a merger with J.P. Morgan and Putnam to combine their retirement plan business, which was the genesis for Empower Retirement. The company's headquarters is in Denver, Colorado. And so that's where they have their main headquarters of operation. They also have satellite offices in Milwaukee, Overland Park, Kansas, and Waltham, Massachusetts. In terms of the risk, part of the process in identifying a separate independent record keeper would be having them also custody the assets. So you would have a special trust set up, similar to like you do with your DB plan probably, that would receive the assets. So it would be outside the general assets of both the employer and Great West Life Insurance Company's assets. Is there one other?
If you are the chosen provider of this service, I know that we have a number of pages that have been handed out to council, and given the level of employees that we have in various departments, will there be a simple question and answer for these employees that they can easily comprehend what they are investing in? And I don't have a copy of that spreadsheet showing what you saw on the slide, but I'll get one when I return to Aiken. But I'm just looking for some simplistic for them to clearly understand what the stake is they're being responsible for.
Yes, so any record keeper would probably offer, obviously, a choice of investment options that the employer would designate. So that could run the gamut from, 50 different options down to a more streamlined investment menu of maybe 20 options or 15 options that could include aggressive large cap funds, small cap funds, and then also what they call target retirement funds that are designed to be a default investment option, usually based off your date of birth.
Okay.
So that is one option that most record keepers would offer, and then there's a whole other process that you would go through to determine which type of those target retirement funds are better. What's their allocation at the target retirement age? What other assumptions are they building in? Do they have a glide path? How long is that glide path of equity to fixed income and so forth? Because they could be very different from company to company.
Okay, you mentioned J.P. Morgan. J.P. Morgan had some issues a year plus ago. How was Great West impacted with those issues?
What issues was that?
You mentioned J.P. Morgan as a possible, as a partner with Great West Life.
Oh yeah, so Great West Life bought the retirement plan business of J.P. Morgan.
Okay.
So not that was their only interaction with that organization.
Okay.
So nothing to do with any of their commercial banking or investment banking business.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Tim.
Okay. And you kind of, maybe intentionally or unintentionally, segued us into our next slide. And Rob covered a lot of this, but I'll let him finish his explanation.
Yep. So we kind of talked on what the responsibilities would be of an independent record keeper. Obviously, the main task that they are charged with is to make sure that they keep track of all of the money from both the participant or employee's perspective and also from the employer. So they would track how much money the employee has deferred, what the employer's contribution has been, how those assets have grown. Also, they would provide the infrastructure to allow participants to control their investment options. So that would mean creating the website or having a website or phone service available to individuals to go online or call up to make any changes with respect to their investment options. Day-to-day administration of the plan, processing distributions, processing paperwork, that sort of thing would be done generally by the record keeper. And then, you know, a lot of it is, too, dependent upon what the plan design is going to be. So there's, you know, certain provisions of a plan or certain plan design features that an organization might want to have. And so, you know, some record keepers have greater flexibility than others in their ability to accommodate the you know, choices or the plan design options that the sponsoring organization wants to consider. You know, and so that also is has to do with the technology that the record keepers offer. Some run a proprietary record keeping software that they build on their own, keep track of, manage. Others buy third party off the shelf, so they're buying another record keeping product, but they just, you know, put their name on it, and there might be less customization, less technological advancement, less participant engagement. So those are some of the other things that are important to consider in terms of who you decide to select as a record keeper. Most of the other stuff we kind of already covered.
How does a record keeper get paid?
They can get paid a number of different ways, and that would be part of the decision-making process upon the selection of the record keeper. Typically, you would see either a fee-based, asset-based fee, or you would see a participant headcount fee, or maybe a combination of the two. Some record keepers may get paid based on the investment options that they offer in the plan. So in the selection process, that would be something to consider. Is the record keeper not going to charge me, but then they're going to limit my ability to offer a diversified menu of investment options to my employees, and they're going to charge me a high expense ratio, and that's how they're going to get paid. So there's a number of different ways that happens. In South Carolina, it's 10 basis points is the asset fee, and then $1 per quarter everybody pays.
And that comes out of money in the fund itself, or is that external to the fund?
Out of the participant account, or you could pay it on the employee's or participant's behalf. So some organizations may say, we'll pick up the tab up to a certain amount. It just kind of depends how you want to handle that, and it's obviously, too, something that can be changed over time, depending on the size of the plan. A lot of companies will have break points or minimums that they require to offer the services.
Well, how is this plan written now? Who pays for the services that you just described?
The way you drafted it and intended it at this point would be all the fees that Rob is talking about would come out of the participants' accounts. So they build up their account, 6% every payroll, and then quarterly or semi-annually, however often they deduct the fees from that individual person's account.
Thank you.
But of course, that it's a choice.
It just seems, what do we got, like, to go back to this other chart? We only have like 251 that are going to participate, 211 active employees, and some of those are on defined benefit plans. So if we started this, we're not going to have a lot of money in this plan for a few years.
It won't be our money. It will be the participants' money.
I know. Not that many participants, I guess, is my point.
It would be a baby plan. It would be starting from scratch, but for the potential, I think we think there'd be about 90 potential people that could choose to leave the DB plan now. As Ben mentioned, there's formulas to, you know, estimate how many of those people would choose to go into the DC plan, but then maybe we don't hire anybody in January of 2018. Maybe their first potential participant comes on board in January or February of 2018. So that means in February of 2019, the first dollars would go into their plan. It's not the city's plan. We're not going to maintain it or custody it. That's the record keeper would keep their money separate. and maybe 30 or 40 or 50 of the 90-something people would choose to have an account started. But maybe none would. I don't know.
I mean, is that something that you would be interested in doing, getting involved as a record keeper for a plan that has 30 participants?
Well, in that case, there would be a minimum fee. So what they usually do is they'll look out over a 5 to 7 year period and come up with certain breakpoints. So at the outset for a startup plan, there's usually going to be a minimum fee required. And then as enough people come into the plan that meet that fee minimum based off of the participant headcount or asset size, then that minimum fee would go away, obviously, because now there's enough of a population in the plan to cover those costs. But that would certainly be a minimum fee depending on exactly how the plan is structured.
There'd be plenty of people interested in being the record keeper for them. Because money's coming.
But again, we're talking about the bottom of our wage structure, probably public services, public works, parks and recreation. Because keep in mind, this is not involved public safety.
There'll be plenty of people. There'll be plenty of entities that would be interested in being a record keeper.
These companies don't go broke.
Yeah.
Trust me. No, I want them to bid. That's why they don't go broke. I just want
them. Yeah. A lot of them won't do a startup. So there's some companies that, if you get 15 responses on a plan like the town of Hilton that has $30+ million in assets, there's some companies that won't do it. We have sort of what we call four mega, a large plan market, so it kind of depends. A lot of companies, you don't really make a lot of money in record keeping, flat out, which is why some companies, if you want someone to do it and you say they're going to do it because they accept money, well, they might put a lot of their products in there or catch a lot of strings to what they're offering.
That makes sense.
In the interest of time, I hope Rob doesn't mind that he has provided you some Empower slides that specifically speak to record keepers and Empower, obviously, in particular. And you have those in your packages, and feel free to review those if you have any questions. I did want to be able to spend time to look at the actual plan document, if Sarah can pull that up. What you have in your agenda. Does anybody have any other questions before we...
What's the game plan for progressing? This is our first meeting. We're talking about it. More work sessions? Is that what the...
Whatever the wish of the council is.
I certainly wouldn't want to hurry the process. I want to make these slow and deliberate. I mean, we're going to end up with a couple of people here that are participating here that won't be as we go through November, and I see one new council member here. The other two I don't see. I'd like to make sure we do it right. It's a very significant issue.
I agree, Councilman DeWell.
Well, we still need to set a timeline, or this will go on forever. Do we want to, how do we set some dates? Like in November we do this, December we do this, and we vote in January. We need some kind of timeline, or first thing you know, it's middle of next year.
It might be helpful to start forward and work with our way back, because we had initially contemplated implementation as of January 2018. So you could, if you decide when you want to implement, then you can figure out how much time you need. So the answer was, we're not pushing anything down your throat. We don't know whether you need one more meeting or you need 10 more meetings. It doesn't matter. You take the time that you take. This is an important decision. But I think at the end of the day, after a couple of discussions, and we can follow this up with questions or whatever. At the end of the day, you're going to cover the ground. I mean, I would assume in several more conversations, you're going to have a grasp enough to decide whether you want to take a vote or not.
Is a copy of our packet and some of this stuff been provided to the new members or the people who are running, let's put it that way?
I don't know whether new members are getting agendas or not. Are they, sir?
It's available to anybody that wants it.
You certainly could if they're not.
Lips getting it, isn't he? Are you getting the agendas, Ed? Ed, are you getting the agendas?
Yes.
I thought so. Okay. I so graciously, since I don't use the whatever these little things are, I donated it to him, my services to him early. So he's very savvy. Well, I'm not.
We'll be looking for your guidance. After today, we'll see how you're feeling and whether you have follow-up questions, whether we want another workshop, whatever you want, we'll do.
Let me just add, this is Leslie. Let me just add that I agree in part to what Dick and Reggie said, especially with Reggie saying that let's get some timelines. We don't want to beat this to death for another 6 or 8 months. But let's ensure that the council members that are not sitting in that room have a package and get a timeline as to what we expect to get some action on this kind of request.
I agree.
Well, I think we can, in short order, finish answering the questions and make a decision if this is a direction we want to go. You know, maybe we need to go through the process of an RFP and everything else. But I think we can reasonably quickly, I don't consider it rushing, but reasonably quickly we could determine whether it's the direction we want to go. And, you know, as you, to kind of restate what you said, John, I mean, this is a very generous thing for the city to, with new hires, you know, maintaining our obligation to the existing employees, but with new hires still matching 6% of their salaries with a contribution to a pension plan. But it's, I mean, these plans and these programs are heavily regulated, highly competitive, and very employee investor centric. I mean, they really are designed and structured to help us protect our employees, help the employees protect themselves with some of the investment options they have and everything else. So, I mean, there's a lot of little nuances we could work out details on, but all in all, it's a big picture question of, is this the direction we want to go? And I think we could probably answer that one fairly quickly.
I guess that's why I'm, we need to give direction somewhere if we... you know, there's no use for the people that are volunteering their effort today or the companies that are volunteering their effort to go on for a number of months. So we need some direction. And we want to give direction and say, okay, move forward and figure out what the fees are and who's going to where and use these numbers on the... So there's some more homework that needs to be done, but I don't think we ought to ask them to spend their funds to provide the homework unless council think that's the direction to go. And maybe at the next meeting, we've, instead of saying a resolution to approve it, it's a resolution, that's the direction we want to go, and this is the data we need. It's a business decision. I mean, let's face it, it's a business decision.
Well, I think we're all agreed that we want to make this move to a defined contribution plan. I think just the mechanics, I asked a bunch of questions I still need answers to. So one of which is this approved by an ordinance or is it a resolution?
Typically, we do it by resolution. There's six different things that state law says council has to do by ordinance. And it says all other matters before council may be approved by either a resolution or an ordinance. So if council decides they want to have two readings of the ordinance, they're allowed to do that. Council has to pass it by resolution, so they're also comfortable with that as well.
I just don't know the reason I ask, because I just don't know whether we're going to get any public input, any questions from the employees on this issue or not. It's pretty critically important to some of them. I mean, most of them haven't been hired, so you know, yet, so it's not affecting them. But the ones under the age of 35 with less than 10 years service certainly have an interest.
Your council,
yeah, but they've got the option. They get to choose which is best for them. Yeah.
Council has to comment whether there's a resolution or an ordinance.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
But I mean, the ordinance is always two.
You know,
yeah.
You know, this was before council, that's what works in cities.
Yeah.
But the defined benefit plan has to be an ordinance. I mean, isn't it? It isn't.
It's an employee benefit.
Oh, okay.
Let me suggest a step forward. And I'm an ordinance person because my first 2 years on council, we did everything by resolution and got them at the meeting that we were going to vote on. And I guess this might be, if we did, this is a possibility, if we did two readings on this, the first reading would be to answer the questions, get these other employees, the potential, the 90 people that have the potential, and then we say the second reading is not in 2 weeks, but whatever, set it for the meeting in December or something. And if you do that, then you set it up for the second, the new council to be weigh in on it too.
I mean, I would certainly be comfortable in that, just speaking with staff. I think, first of all, a resolution, I liked your idea of something to say, let's explore this further so it gives a consensus of council. And then, I don't disagree with it doing an ordinance for it. I mean, I think it can be either. So if we could do an ordinance, it would have to. But, just so that it doesn't take another one to move forward, I think a resolution would probably be fine to give this council an opportunity to voice its support for moving forward and then doing the ordinance.
The resolution.
I think it's consensus to move forward.
Yeah, I do too. I mean,
you just got to get more details.
But that would certainly be worth doing.
But there's some questions that have been asked by the various members of council, and what Ms. Abney has said, we need to go to these, I'm going to use 90 employees and see what their thoughts are about transferring, if that makes a difference to the fees we pay and so forth. And I think, we need to move to that step, and if the companies feel more confident that we pass a resolution that, hey, we want to do this, but we need more, we need some answers, that's fine with me.
Sure.
And if we wait till she's...
Well, for clarity's sake, so there's no confusion for the newspaper or whomever, there's nothing that is necessarily going to change for any existing employees. Whether there's 90 that are eligible to change or not, that can be something that's done of their own free will. There'll be no pressure for them to do that. And if they determine it's in their own best interest, they'll do it. And as far as the fees go, has been already answered to us. The minimal fees that there are will be taken out of their account, all pre-tax, if they did decide to switch from a defined benefit to a defined contribution plan. But there would be an education process for them, but I don't know that we have to educate them before we make any determinations whether we go forward, because they have the defined benefit plan. If they want it, they can keep it. Nothing's going to change as long as they keep working. It's only if they decide to make the decision later to switch to the defined contribution plan, and that's entirely of their own free will. There's nothing that's going to change anything for anybody that's working for the City of Aiken right now on their retirement.
How involved does the, let's say we approve the concept that we want to do this? Does the council get involved in choosing the record keeper and or choosing the company that we deal with, Vanguard, and Fidelity, etc.? Is that a council decision, or is that something that staff does?
Typically, it would be done by staff. I mean, obviously, it's not going to be buying a widget, so it's really a nebulous number until we know what's going to be in the plan. So it's not like we're going to be saying we want to buy this for $100,000 or anything like that. But I do appreciate Mr. Mary's comment, because I, for one, do not feel qualified to educate 91 people prior to having a defined contribution plan. We wouldn't even know what to tell them.
No.
And prior to having the record keeper on board, who would be the one with all of the educational materials and the formulas that you talked about. So I just want to put that out there.
Do we need to give ourselves flexibility to extend that conversion date if it takes us longer than we thought to get a record keeper or to develop the tools or the funds that are going to be available?
Warner has a response. Okay.
Right now, if you adopt it effective January 1, 2018, we purposely did it this way, we don't need to have a record keeper in place and everything until January 1, 2019. That will give us 12 calendar months. which we hope to pick a record keeper in the first 6 to 8 of those months, which would then give us another 6 to 4 months to do the education for these people. So we designed it for that. That's one of the reasons for the 1 year of service, to give us the next 12 months to have everything in place. But I do say that you need to, if it's going to be a January 1, 2018 date, it needs to be adopted before then, because if it's not adopted before then, when we hire someone in January of 2018, we don't know what to tell them as to what will happen to them. So, I mean, I think the idea of taking your time but in adopting it by at least by the end of December would work. You put it in place, then the staff can go forward on doing the mechanics of what needs to be done to implement it during that time. They can come to council and say, look, we've talked to these record keepers. These are the fees. We want to tell you this is our recommendation. Do you agree with us? That's one approach. Or you just say, hey, staff, you go pick, you know, the record keeper. And the record keeper that they pick will also have, will probably help you point the direction of the funds.
So we could make the decision in December.
Yes. Yes. But not any later than December. If you do it later than December, we've got to put a delayed date.
Can you change record keepers?
Yes, you can. But with a startup plan, you're going to want a partner, not just a generic record keeper. You're going to want somebody who's coming in because they're saying, look, this is a startup plan. We're not going to make any money. And they're going to probably say, we would like a 5-year commitment.
That's right.
We're willing to go in, but we want a commitment from you that you're going to stay with us so we can work it out. So while, yes, you can, you want to pick a record keeper that you feel comfortable with for the extended time. One of the reasons Empower is brought, because they work with the state of South Carolina and do their 457 plan. And Hilton Head, after an involved process, also selected them. They are very highly rated by the national organizations who interview financial advisors and plan sponsors. So they're highly rated and highly thought of. So, I mean, they might be a good partner. I'm not sure with a startup plan. I did a startup plan about 5 years ago for a company, and we sent out RFP requests to 20 people. We had 3 people respond on a startup plan. People are just not interested. They're kind of doing you a favor on a startup plan, and they want a long-term commitment, and they want to be a partner with you.
So let me ask this. What is there need to be anything on the agenda for the 30th of October?
I think we should have, what I'm recommending is that we direct staff to do a resolution to continue to explore further. I don't think it would be necessarily a first vote, but it would be to give direction so that we could have that vote by the end of the year with that in mind.
And we could have another work session with that, as long as it takes.
And I would like for that, if we could read the resolution somehow to state, in particular for existing employees, that it doesn't affect what they have, just to relieve any angst that there might be within our staff.
I think it's important to do that, because the Committee on Misinformation is always at work, and it will sure be at work.
I want to make sure that word gets out to our employees.
And I think Mr. O'Brien has a very sharp pencil over there. He could help write us an article to say that.
But the thing is, we have a draft of the document, an outline of a plan. In order to adopt it, council needs to tell us the details of what they want, like the year of service, the vesting, the rate of contribution, those kind of details. And I think probably a working session is something, not a council meeting, to work that out, because you need to come and say, we like what you propose, or these are the things we'd like to do instead.
A quick list of what, I mean, I know what the, like, 3 or 4 of the big ones are, but could you make a quick list of what questions we need to resolve on those things? Obviously, the vesting thing, years of service thing, all that. But is there any sort of quick list of X number?
Yeah.
Can you make that list and give it to them to distribute to us?
Okay. Also, whatever we do, let's attach this to it so that it becomes part of the permanent record of the council action.
And this
burned on that before.
Well, this is not an action yet. We haven't taken action on that.
Now, but I want the actual, if you go to page 7, yeah, go to page 7 of the package that was sent out. That needs to be part of this, whatever cover letter we want to put on it, so that when somebody says, well, what did you vote on or what did you work from, we all are talking from the same document. Because this is a work session, and a lot of people don't look at the stuff in the work session, but they'll look at the minutes of the council meeting.
Oh, I see what you're pointing. I get your point.
Okay. And all I'm saying is, whatever...
But in other words, if somebody goes back and read the minutes, you want this in there so they can see what we're talking about.
Got it.
Yeah.
So this would be an attachment to whatever this list of
okay.
questions
is. That makes sense. That's a good idea.
That way it becomes, a permanent record into the
people can see what we're referring to.
You got it.
For what it's worth, I thought the attachment to that agenda item that you're referring to, the whole document to me made a lot of sense. It was very well written.
It's well done. I have a couple of heartburns with it, and one of them is easy to change. But anyway, now that what becomes from page 7 to page 59 becomes a record of council action. And whatever the cover letter says, you know, we got 10 questions. It doesn't really matter.
So will you include that in our minutes for this meeting so that people can reference that?
And it'll be attached to the letter we have at the October 30th meeting.
Well, one question's going to be, what's the sense of the council on how soon do you vest people, or is it a sliding scale, or?
Right now it's vested at 1 year. I mean at 5 years.
5 years.
Full time, 5 years.
I think that's an incentive to maintain or to retain employees also.
I think Rob said the other plan that we might consider is 20 at 4, kind of a gradual, which goes all the way to 7.
Start of vesting process.
One of the reasons of 5 years is we look at your turnover, and believe it or not, over a 5-year period, you probably have a 70% turnover. Mm-hmm. You probably have a 40% turnover, 30% turnover in the first year. And so you're saying that if you got a 70% turnover in 5 years, you really don't want those people taking your money who've only been here. That's your point. We'll put those in the choices. We'll give you a list of the decisions, and we'll tell you, if there was a basis for it, it may just be that's what we get in the defined benefit plan. But if there's a basis, we'll tell you the basis so you can make an intelligent decision.
This seems like it might be a good spot to pause this.
I still want to make sure that all four potential city council candidates get this data so they can study it, because they may very well be involved in decision making. So.
Oh, they will be.
So there's four, and I'd like to make sure they get all the data that we have been given tonight.
Yeah, they'll be been authorized before the second meeting in November.
No,
All right, we'll direct staff to make sure they get that too.
Very good.
I want to thank our panel.
Yes, thank you very much.
Our finance director and staff have worked hard to present this to us and put this package together. Your time. We're adjourned?
Yes. Thank you. I move to adjourn.
All right, we have a motion and second. All in favor, join Councilman Ebner in standing up.
And Kevin Dwyer leaving.